to GalacticConnection.com, one of the most popular blogs on the World Wide Web today for alternative news. Stay tuned for the latest information on our world shift from enslavement to galactic involvement, as well as current intel on any blockages impeding us from our sovereign birthright. Knowledge and self-mastery are key at this time. Our commitment is to present you with the latest breaking conspiratorial articles, off-world messages, exopolitics, cutting-edge technologies and sciences, and also an ever-significant intertwining of spiritual support and metaphysical scope that one needs to dive down the rabbit hole and search for truth with balance. We are truly on the horizon of a new golden age filled with the promise for more love, worldwide peace, and accelerated intuitive skills, where every living being can exist in cohesion and abundance. It is whatever we envision and dream this new world to be. I say to you now, let's redefine the new world to the beginnings of our own precious heaven on earth. Galactic Connection is here to provide the pulse of Mother Earth through an eclectic range of interviews each Tuesday afternoon from 3 to 4:55 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Station 2 on BBS Radio, expanding your perspectives on how we can once and for all take back our freedoms, our joy, and our connection with our mighty I Am presence. Our intention remains true to connect hearts and minds everywhere in order to obtain global unity and galactic and universal acceptance. Our discussions will continue to cover anything to do with galactic society and our involvement with our galactic brothers and sisters. Our guests are experts in their fields, and our radio shows have been coined as some of the most thought-provoking out there. In addition to our daily blog, which runs 365 days a year, we also offer a realm of healing services such as our world-renowned implant removal processes, our spiritual past life clearings, our galactic violet ray alchemy from Alexandra, who shares in the lineage of Merlin, and other cutting-edge healing technologies. Check our site out at galacticconnection.com now. Sending you a wave of light, love, and inspiration, and a personal hug and thank you for listening to our Galactic Connection radio show and visiting our blog today. Hello, hello, everyone. This is Alexandra Metters of GalacticConnection.com. And you know what I'm about to say? I have a special, special interview for you today. Now, before I dive into that, I would like to make a couple of announcements. And I want everyone to make sure that they understand we are at the end of a world age. There is going to be a massive amount of conflict between that which we feel is really light information and that which we feel is very dark information. All of this is really coming to a head, and the eclipse that we just experienced is really pushing everything to the top of the surface. This is all good, folks. So as much as we all feel like we're about to climb out of our skin, be patient and really understand this is the process, right? It's almost like giving birth, having a baby. You know that you got to go through the growing pains and the birth pains and that kind of thing. We're almost there. I want everyone to kind of hang in and hang tough, because these next couple of weeks are going to be super, super intense. So with that said, I have been getting a call for a very long time as to how I can bring some information out to my most amazing audience, and that would be you, to really enlighten all of us in how do we bridge where we are now to where we're going in the golden age regarding our finances, regarding our indebtedness, regarding our taxes. And frankly, I've had so many conversations with many of you that you're very enlightened, but there's still that residue of fear. There's still that residue of not feeling fully empowered. This is really, truly a first chakra issue. And it's very important that we face this head on, that we address this, because we are leading the journey here. We are the leaders of this journey, and it's up to us what we create. Bottom line, we're creating this new heaven on earth. So, you know, it's important that we open our eyes to the way in which the regular old paradigm has been behaving, has been operating regarding finances, and to really take accountability for the way in which we snap when we hear the word debt or tax or jail or law or legal. I mean, seriously, it's something we really need to address. So with that said, who I'm bringing on today, his name is Tonson Fairmont. He is a consultant on debt elimination, common law trusts, asset protection, and freedom from income tax. Now, wouldn't that be nice? He's also a meditation teacher, celestial musician, heavenly artist, and writer on Vedic science, higher states of consciousness, and the dawn of the Age of Enlightenment. He was educated at the Maharishi International University in America and the European Research University in Switzerland, where he received the title Governor of the Age of Enlightenment in 1977, at the ripe old age of 22. That's amazing. He's also a former keynote speaker at numerous international investment conferences. And in fact, folks, he and I kind of cross paths there. So we're going to bring that up in a few minutes. He's been a non-tax filer since 1990. We're going to talk about that too. And has been a manager of various pure natural law sovereign irrevocable trusts since 1993. He's either spoken or had attended, you know, hundreds of seminars, and this guy is very well versed in asset protection, freedom from income tax, individual sovereignty, government exposés, patriot campaigns, high yield investments, the UCC, the banking cabal, commercial remedies, mortgage fraud, debt elimination, prosperity programs, and the global currency reset. So that's a lot of information. And let me tell you, I've gotten really deep in this area of research, and it's really intense. And I think Tonson will agree, you have to stay on top of it because it's changing by the hour, you know, with the legalities that go on this planet. So he is bringing forth some solutions, and he's pretty stoked, as am I, to hear about them. Now, for all of you out there who have delved into trusts and debt elimination and things like that, we're going to go over a few of those types of scenarios today and see what we can do to just assist you on your journey to a higher state of consciousness and truly living a true state of sovereignty, because that is our divine birthright. So, hello, Tonson. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. So I read in one of your other bios that you wrote a book. Let me see. I was just fascinated by this. And it was called Cosmic Renaissance, Enlightenment in the Arts. And it was about a time travel experience. I really thought you should start out with that because it sounds like you got a glimpse of the future. Did that impact where you are today as far as what you're doing with this information?
Yes, it has kind of served as a access point around which everything else revolves. So thank you for bringing that up at the beginning. That's an excellent place to start.
Good.
Although that book is still forthcoming. The book that I came out with in 1997 was Sovereignty Consciousness. And a lot of what's in that book is being incorporated into the new one, Cosmic Renaissance. But yes, it was a lot of this has stemmed from it's a lifelong vision or a lifelong awareness, but it came to a peak in 1976 when I was in Switzerland on that long course. And that was, it kind of happened by surprise. It wasn't something that I was expecting or, planning on, but we were about 300 or 400 of us in a hotel in Interlaken on a very long meditation course for 6 months. And during one of those days, I understand Sandy's from South Africa. My partner was from South Africa too. And he had the same experience I did on the same day. But we didn't know that until 4 months later. And we were comparing notes, and his experience was the same as mine, except his was in terms of South Africa and mine was in terms of United States. But basically, we both tapped into a future experience, direct experience of the completed Golden Age of Enlightenment materialized and experienced it vividly for about 2 hours in graphic detail. As if, I mean, it was so real. It was as real as you're sitting in the room right now, or more so, that I traveled around United States and primarily California, and I saw what I feel is happening and is going to materialize without really any doubt. Even though there is free will is a major factor, as you know.
Yes.
And every soul on this planet gets a choice in whether it's going to come, how it's going to come. Nevertheless, what I think deals with this free will is a kind of massive wave of bliss, a massive, 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 massive wave that comes down periodically and washes over solar systems throughout the cosmos. And this bliss, it kind of reconstructs the stories of every soul. So yeah, there's free will, and yes, every soul has a choice. But when a soul is faced with a choice between what it's experiencing today and that kind of bliss, it's a no-brainer what's going to be chosen.
Wow, that's so cool. I wanted to ask you, do you feel that people are already starting to get an inkling of that with some of the new wave of energies that are coming through?
The more aware ones, probably the ones listening on this show for the most part, the more aware ones are, yes, absolutely. It's kind of like the ones up on the mountain can see the sunrise first. The ones down in the valley are still in the dark, you know.
Because I've had that experience, you know, some of these intense energies. There's a very uplifting, blissful moment in time, you know.
Yes. So what I saw was that, first of all the things one would expect about a golden age were present. So you had no poverty, no sickness, no crime, no war, no pollution, none of the negative things. All were gone. And then their place was, you know, universal prosperity. Food, clothing, shelter, transportation, communication, basic luxuries, and dignity were universally available to everyone, whether they work or not. And indeed, perhaps a small percentage, 5 or 10% of the population, chose not to work, and that was fine. That's fine with the rest of the population, that the others are choosing work of their own joy. And when I passed by a factory, I thought it was like a playground. It was so beautiful and colorful, and people were having fun. They were making things, you know. You could walk up to any person on the street and hug them as your brother or sister. There was tremendous diversity. We think we have diversity today, but I think most individuals haven't had an opportunity to fully develop their individuality and uniqueness to the degree that will happen in the golden age. So the diversity is going to increase, and the unity and oneness is going to be realized at the same time. So there was both an outer manifestation of paradise and an inner awakening. Now, that doesn't mean that every human being had achieved enlightenment and cosmic consciousness and had stabilized it, but it had at least been glimpsed. Even the darkest of the dark had glimpsed it. And this glimpse was enough to change everything. A split-second glimpse was enough. That was the moment. That was the turning point. That was the twinkling of the eye. When right now, as you know, we are in this process of increasing energies. Both the negative and the positive are increasing and increasing and increasing and increasing. It's going higher. It's like a water on your stove that's heating up, you know, and it's going towards a boiling point. And nobody knows what the temperature is. They know it boils at 212 degrees, but they don't know what the temperature is. They think, it's about to happen. It's going to happen by Tuesday. It's going to happen by Thursday, you know? And it just, oh man, it's I can't take it anymore. And then it just keeps going higher, right? So the energies on the planet are increasing. The intensity is increasing. And both the negative and the positive are increasing. But there's a certain point at which the negative becomes self-destructive.
Which has already happened.
It's already happening, and the creative just goes on growing because it's life-supporting, and it's harmless, and it's innocent, and it's pure.
Yes.
And so there's a certain point, we call it critical mass. Swami Biyanananda calls it uncritical mass and non-judgment day. But whatever you want to call it, there's a point where, boom, there's a flash. And this flash occurs throughout the planet. This was prophesied by George Washington had a vision of the future of the United States where an angel showed him the future, and he saw it.
Wow.
The Shambhala prophecy from the East that said there will come a point in history when Big Brother will have taken over the whole planet and will be ruling it through oppressive rule, but then the forces of Shambhala would rise. That's basically the aware, the awake throughout the world. Big Brother would try to conquer it, but it would come forth with an overwhelmingly superior technology and defeat Big Brother and remove it from power. And this would issue in an age of peace, an age of enlightenment. So there are prophecies all over the world of what's happening. And I think I was just privileged to be among a group of people who got a glimpse of it for a couple of hours and stepped into it.
Wow.
The most significant thing, Alexandra, was that everyone in this future, near future, I would say, very near future, looked back and were surprised at how smooth the transition had been.
I have been talking for a long time about this does not have to be hard, and this does not have to be where everyone is going broke and starving and no water or whatever for weeks or months on end. That is a fear porn belief system that's been put out there deliberately. And again, I stress to all of us, we are co-creators in this shift. It is up to us how we want the shift to unfold. It really is. So I was reading through your newsletter for February. And before we all dive into that, let me go ahead and get everybody on the website. The website for Tonson is debt-elimination.net. Okay, that's debt-elimination.net if you want to pull that up while we are going through this information. And I was looking at your February newsletter, and it was talking about how you're just so excited. You've been having countless victories and lots of breakthroughs. Can you kind of get started as far as we all keep hearing rumblings about the changes going on that were supposedly on a paper level going back to the Republic, that the Federal Reserve is supposedly no more, that they switched from gov to org, which is provable. How is that influencing what you're getting into?
It's just creating a favorable, supportive environment for what we're doing. The time is right. The time is ripe for people to begin moving out of debt. In the dark age and during this last phase transition century, there has been this monetary system based on debt, as you know.
Yes.
In the old days, when a conqueror wanted to take over a country, it was kind of messy. He would come in with his army and kill people, and it was all very, difficult. And then even when they're taken over, the people resist it. They don't like it. So over the centuries, they got more sophisticated. And in about the 1700s, they decided, let's take over financially instead of militarily. And so they got a lot more refined about it. And then furthermore, let's keep it a secret. And here's a country, we call this the home of the brave and the land of the free, right?
Yeah.
How many times when you're growing up did you hear, I live in a free country. This is a free country. I can do what I want. Yeah, right. So if you think you're free, was it Goethe or was it one of those great, he said, no nation is more enslaved than the ones who falsely believe they are free. So we have a country with all the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto.
I remember reading that. That was a long time ago. Yeah, that was pretty mind-blowing. Can you just summarize really quickly for people? Because remember, we want to cover all our bases, even for those that are just starting out.
I want to relate it to your question, though. Let's not lose track of that. And the question was regarding debt elimination and the successes. So let's start with saying to the audience, we have a 100% success rate. I'm not promising the future. I'm not predicting the future. I'm not saying if you use our debt elimination system that we predict it's going to work for you. We just state the truth. The truth, and that's the name of our company, La Verite, the truth, is that it has not failed thus far since 2002. Meaning, if you apply our instructions, follow through, and don't give up, thus far, it has not failed for anyone, for the debt to go away. Collection efforts stop, and for it basically to free you from those payments. So, the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto, I don't remember all of them, but it was a progressive income tax, takeover of the media, all of these things have been implemented in the United States.
Basically, everything in our society has been taken over. There is nothing that is sovereign.
Right.
You know.
So
it's communist. You know.
It was the hurrah of the banking cartel that was conceived centuries ago. That let's take over the world through debt. Get everyone in debt. Has anyone ever read the Confessions of a Hitman by John Perkins? Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And he used to work for the World Bank, and they would fly him to various countries and hire him as an economist to inflate their future economic numbers so as to loan them way massively more than they could ever repay in the secret hope that they would default on the loan and then they could go in and take over the country. And that's what they did.
Wow.
Step by step, country by country around the world.
And haven't they've been so successful at that what are we down to, like maybe two countries that literally exchange gold and silver coins?
Right. Yeah. Right. And a couple of countries that kicked out the banking cartel like Iran, and that's why they were sanctioned and all that.
Yeah.
So,
unfortunately.
Individuals. So how many individuals are in debt? You're in mortgage debt or in credit card debt. You're in tax, beholden to the tax man, and so forth. So these kinds of encroachments on the individual life are what we are referring to as invasions of your rights and of your freedom based on an egoistic, spiritually asleep idea that we're above all you peons down there and we're going to take over the planet. And we're going to rule the planet to our benefit at the expense of everybody else. And they're, as you probably know, their big dream was to get the population down to about 500 million, about less than 10% of what it is now, and then enslave those. And that, of course, has not happened, will not happen, cannot happen in the nature of things. But that was their plan. That was their dream. And so it's an... What I'm fascinated with is the divine intelligence and how it has allowed just enough violation of universal law to occur on this planet for all the humans to learn their lessons, but not so much as to destroy the planet or us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we would be in a full-blown plague. We would be in an absolute devastation regarding the financial system. If you have any kind of economics background and you've been watching the financial system, you should know by now that there's no rhyme or reason that it's still chugging along. There's definitely been some divine intervention regarding that.
Tremendous, tremendous divine intervention to the degree allowed by a fantastically refined calculation of individual karmas and everything down to the the microscopic level. It's amazing the precision that it unfolds with.
Very much. And even those that we perceive as non-benevolent beings for humanity, they're playing out their role to bring light, you know, and done it without them.
In my Cosmic Renaissance book, I talk about the three phases of world history and the three phases of the individual soul's evolution. And the first phase is innocence and ignorance, where it's kind of like a Garden of Eden, where everything is paradise. That's what we came out of. Each of us came out of a time in other planes and dimensions, or even in earlier times on this planet, in the third dimension, when we had everything. Everything was wonderful. Everything was ideal. It was a paradise. Everything was provided, and we were still in the heart, still in the tree of life, and there was a sense of oneness, a sense of tremendous joy, tremendous ease, and everything was provided, everything was easy. And then the second phase began when we either lost that paradise lost, or we developed amnesia, we forgot it, or we were kicked out of the garden, as the biblical story goes, or however it ended. Did you know that every ancient culture on this planet has that story in their legends? Every ancient, it's not just the Judeo-Christian tradition.
Yes.
Every ancient tradition, east, west, north, and south, has a story of how there was an original paradise and we lost it.
Very true.
All over the world in ancient history.
And not only that, a lot of the wisdom that's been shared, you know, the standard operating procedure was for it to be shared from one mouth to the other, from one master to a student. Down in time, to the point where now, if you look at all the ancient texts, that is the very common thread. And when you think about it being passed from one mouth to another, and there's that common thread, it's amazing, you know. So, anyway, well, Thompson, let's dive into your experience so far. I mean, I know that you've been doing this for decades. And you've really done your homework and involved yourself in a lot of different types of not only solutions, but also investments yourself. And I think that it'd be really important for people to know the plethora of information that you've been exposed to and the experiences that you've been exposed to. So where did this all begin for you as far as really having the passion to create a solution for people to get out of debt? Thompson? Are you there? Uh-oh. Thompson? Oh, there you are. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay. I couldn't hear you.
Sorry. The mic must have gone off.
That was weird.
So,
did you hear my question?
Yes.
Okay.
So, the best way to answer that would be that the impetus, the foundation, was this perception of our present transition into a golden age, the transition between the ages. That's really the foundation, you know? Sure. And while a lot of other people of my generation were going off and getting their MBAs at Stanford and UCLA and Harvard and so on, I wasn't so ahead in those areas. I was more in this area of foreseeing the golden age and helping to bring it.
It's amazing.
And that's what drew me into a perception through the 80s that something's not quite right with government and banking, something's not quite right with how things are being administered. And by the 90s, you know, I was heavily involved in these ideas. So where would you like to go with that specifically?
Well, just give us a little snippet of some of the seminars that you participated in. I mean, what was the core foundation of your education in the financial sector part of it?
In 92, I got involved with the Free Enterprise Forum. That's Income Builders International. And they put on workshops where, you know, ideas for, it's called the CEO space now. If you have an idea, and you want to develop a income around it, they would bring teams together and help you create an income around your passion.
Ooh,
they call it a wow. If you have a passion and it's something you love, you would do, whether it made you any money or not, and then you could be paid to do it, you'd be ecstatic, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they call that a wow. And I got involved in that and started attending a lot of those and sending people to it and helping people with their projects. And then in 94, I moved to Phoenix and worked with Terra Libre for a while, which is a kind of a freedom-oriented education organization, and wrote for them. That's where I first wrote the article, Sovereignty Consciousness, the Atlantis Project, the World Citizen Ideas of Gary Davis, and so on, which wow. became chapters in my book.
Cool.
And in 96, got involved with Investors International, and that's the group that invited me to speak because of the Sovereignty Consciousness article. And you know about that because you were involved with associates of that.
GPG, yeah. They were after Investors International, the Global Prosperity Group. So you right. that was the predecessor.
Right. So Investors International was simply a seminar series held in tax havens and on ocean cruises around the Caribbean and the Pacific Rim that drew together people who could teach how to reduce taxes, how to set up offshore asset protection structures, how to increase investment yields. And I was brought in to speak on sovereignty consciousness, which was kind of the philosophical backdrop to it. And so we had a lot of fun, you know. I got standing ovations. People appreciated it. It seemed to fit in. I was basically showing how in America, you have in our Supreme Court cases, 6 U.S. Supreme Court cases that says Americans are sovereigns without subjects. Starting in 1792, the first such Supreme Court case stating that. It was a redefinition of the word sovereignty, where you don't have subjects. No one is over you. No one is under you. We are all equally kings and queens.
Yes.
On this land. And it was a nice vision, and it was one that was lived by a small minority of the population, but most people didn't understand it, didn't comprehend it, didn't live it. And I began to wonder why. Why is it that this beautiful vision, which our own Supreme Court affirmed, why is it not being lived? And I realized it was because there was insufficient development of internal consciousness. It is known amongst those who practice anything, east, west, north, or south, that develops consciousness, that if one gains a high enough level of stabilized baseline consciousness, you are automatically more intelligent, you are automatically more ethical, you are automatically more good. You don't have to be forced by Big Brother. You don't have to be coerced by religions. You do not have to be persuaded to follow do's and don'ts, regulations, commandments, laws, because you're automatically good from within. On the contrary, if you have too low a level of consciousness, it doesn't matter how many rules are imposed on you. It doesn't matter how many laws there are. You're still not going to be able to comply with them. And so in the Dark Age, of course, fear has been used to try to rule society. Well, if you disobey, you're going to be sorry, you know, and you're going to be tortured, and you're going to suffer, and you're going to be punished. And you look out at the universe, Alexandra, you look at the beautiful harmony of the stars and the galaxies, how everything flows, everything rotates in harmony, everything is like music. In fact, those in higher states of consciousness can hear the music of the spheres. Mm. Everything rotates in silent, beautiful, musical, harmonic, precision, order, symmetry, beauty. The universe is governed in this magnificent way, and we down here on this little backward planet try to use police and armies and punishment and fear. It's not working very well, is it?
No.
Thousands of years have proven it doesn't work very well.
Yeah, this is true.
The universe is governed through bliss. Every planet is a living system. Every star is a living being. Consciousness pervades the universe. Quantum physics has been realizing this. Consciousness is not limited to the brain or the brain physiology. It is an omnipresent reality. and it is present everywhere. The universe is governed through consciousness, bliss, a feeling nature, so that if a heavenly body goes out of its orbit, it suddenly feels less bliss. Why does it stay in its orbit? Because that's the path of maximum bliss. And that is a far superior way of ruling the universe, through happiness, through feeling, through harmony, through music, through bliss.
That's beautiful.
That is how the golden age will be governed.
And the Tonson, I mean, everything you're describing is truly what everyone wants, but I still find that when I speak to people about breaking free of their taxes, their mortgage, their mortgages, their debt, and that sort of thing, you know, their asset protection, they immediately go into this place of fear. So how do we counteract that? You know, because this is really what, this is truly, in my opinion, where the rubber meets the pavement. In fact, we just did a very powerful ceremony last night about this very subject. And it was very interesting because when we were working on the planet, I kept asking them, I've been asking them over and over again when I do my mission work, how do we release this program? There is such a strong, entrenched, anchored program, especially around the light workers and those that are of an enlightenment position in society right now. They're so stuck with not being able to make money the way they want to, not being able to really live their life in the bliss that you're talking about. And it all gets back to finance.
First of all, realize that any kind of fear is exactly what the lords of darkness wanted everyone to feel. So if you feel that, then the congratulations goes to the lords of darkness because they've achieved their dream. They wanted to rule everybody through fear. The cure for fear is knowledge, and there are two types of knowledge, the inner and the outer. The inner knowledge is, of course, exploring your own pure consciousness. The outer knowledge is the knowledge of debts and taxes and the mechanisms of slavery, how they work, and how to be free of them. And that's what we provide. That's what our website provides, and our, you know, that's what this program is about.
And you really, you hit the nail on the head as far as we are really moving into the golden age. And how do we go there if we don't start really looking at being completely in alignment, not only just our thoughts and our intentions and our heart and our service, but also our own finances and the way in which we honor that which we receive in exchange for what we provide.
Right.
So that really motivated me to do this with you today. You know, I think the other thing that I would like to address, because one area where Tonson and I really connect, and that is when I was in Global Prosperity Group, I saw really decent people with really pure intentions trying to set up investments that had very high yields of payout, and they were desperately trying to get them paid out to the little guy, as they called it, so that these were only set up for the very wealthy or the very connected. And they really tried to kind of break ranks and create some of these investments. And not only did I get a full-blown course in how the government works with investments, and they'll do everything in their power to avoid anyone who's not in the elite circle to receive that benefit, but that was a really big deal back then to set up your own private bank. And I know you have a little bit of experience with that. I want everyone to sit back and understand that if you delve into breaking free of the financial system and you truly are stepping into your sovereignty, you have to get out of the box of the triggered words such as taxes and debt and even going to jail, maybe serving time in jail. Because I'm telling you, I know some of the most amazing patriots out there who have served time deliberately over and over and over again to hammer the courts, to try to set up precedents, to try to make some headway for the rest of us. And I'd like to know what you have to say regarding that.
The first thing to keep aware of is that no one who has ever done the debt elimination that we provide has had any problem with jail or, you know, prosecution. And also, no one has had any problem with even a fiscal or civil matter of owing money after the debt elimination program was implemented. So that's number one. That's how we can say it has 100% success rate.
Good.
So don't worry about that. I myself spent time in prison, not because of that, but on an entirely different matter that you were just referring to, having to do with investments. And that's not really something that I'm offering to people. I'm not offering investments. I'm not in that business. But yes, in 1999, I did get involved at that time with one of those high-yield investment banks and naively thought that we were protected. And we were giving high yields. And it was in the Caribbean. It was in a bank that was paying 100% per year and more on certificates of deposit, guaranteed, backed by gold. And it was proven. We had hundreds of professionals come from all over the world. It was not a foolish investment. It was not a foolish involvement on the part of my partners and myself. It was not a high-risk situation. It was a good, proven, sound, sane involvement that was backed by the IDIC, International Deposit Indemnity Corporation. There were proven reserves of gold backing the deposits. Everything was there, and that's why we proceeded with it. It's not that it was risky, but rather it was attacked.
Exactly.
It was just like a ship sailing through the ocean that had all its protections and all of its, you know, but it was attacked by a more powerful enemy. And the enemy was vicious and well-armed. And that enemy turned out to be the House of Rothschild in London.
Wow.
Agents of the House of Rothschild in London attacked the parent bank. 5,000 investors lost 100% of their money, consisting of over $200 million, of which our little bank was just one of the 12 or 13 around the parent bank. And to this day, not a penny of that money has ever been repatriated to any of the investors.
Absolutely.
Some of the investors committed suicide over it. Oh. The chairman of the parent bank was murdered. I went to prison in 2005 for a crime I never committed, for crimes committed by the Rothschilds and their agents.
Wow.
Because I was scapegoated. I was basically the fall guy. They needed to pin it on somebody. So they took some of the bank officers and said, look, where did the money go? And they, you know, I was naive enough to think that, oh, you can prove anything. If money disappeared, you can get the bank wire records, right? Well, if they control the bank wires, they control the records. They took our computers. They took our files. They took all the records. They controlled even the inflow and the outflow of wires into and out of the parent bank. So they basically took control of the entire process and even of the media around it.
It's crazy.
So it is a masterpiece of cleverness and of obfuscation.
I have to add to this. I know three older gentlemen that became very good friends of mine when I was, you know, just different all over the United States. All three of them had successful investing in Europe, because we all know that investments in the United States are a complete, total, absolute joke, okay? So they were successful. The investments came through. They received a notification. The money actually made it to the bank account. They had asset protection, the whole shebang, and the same sort of situation occurred. The money was, get this, it was held back to determine if it went through the three C's, okay, for making sure it's cleared, and that it wasn't drug money and that sort of thing. that was actually approved. All of that went through with flying colors. And at the time that the money was supposed to be transferred from Europe to New York City, because that's the only place supposedly where the money is sent in and out of the United States from, it all of a sudden disappeared. They then went to court. They received a judgment that they were completely innocent, that there was nothing wrong with this money. They never saw the money again. And I'm just telling folks, this is common. This is the stuff you don't hear about. This is like everyday news. I can tell you another story of another gentleman who ran a small bank down in the Bahamas. At that time, it was a very, very major tax haven back in those days. And he was doing everything he was supposed to do. He was supposed to protect the sovereignty and the security and the safety and the privacy of each of his clients. He did that. He came to work one day. His entire bank was completely surrounded with men from RICO with machine guns. And you know what they wanted? They wanted all of his records. Because they found out that there were some investments going on and they were too successful. So this is the kind of stuff I want everyone to be very aware. We want to be completely transparent here. So people understand that in the 90s, right, and especially the earlier 2000s, Tonson, I mean, it was pretty hairy there for a lot of people that were really trying to break free, come up with some solutions, et cetera.
Yeah, thank heaven now in 2016, the atmosphere has improved a lot.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, it's actually a lot better now. But back then, you had 9/11, you had the Bush administration, you had all these hurrahs of the cabal. It was really riding high, you know. And their dream was achieved to a large degree, which was to wipe off the face of the earth any high-yield investment that would reward the little guy.
Yes.
If you're a small investor and you get more than about 20% a year in a managed account. Now, if you were doing this with your own trading, they can't really interfere with that. If you're doing your own trading, your own buying and selling, okay, you know. But if it's in a managed account where you just put your money in and somebody trades it for you, you know, and they produce a high yield, you know, more than 20, 30, 40% a year, watch out.
So true.
That's supposed to be reserved for the wealthy, you know.
Very, very true.
If you put in $1 million minimum, you know, or 10 million or up, oh, that's okay, because that narrows the market. It's not going to upset their apple cart. It's not going to upset their global dominance, right? They can continue to sell their measly 6% a year bonds and so forth to the
public.
Yeah.
And pay people how much to put their money in a checking account here or a savings account here?
What, 2%, 3%?
If you're lucky, it's 2%.
If you're lucky. And not even keeping up with inflation. Yeah.
It's laughable.
It's going broke slowly.
It really is. So I just kind of wanted to put that out there that, you know, there is so much, there are so many financial patriots that have really done their time, so to speak, in paving the road for these kinds of processes and packages to be available to us today. And I challenge each and every one of you. I really feel strongly that if we are at all married to bringing forth some sort of humanitarian cause, you've got to do it properly. And that opens up the door to my next question. And that is, let's talk about, before we get into debt elimination, let's talk about if all of these individuals that are listening and they really want to start their own health center, let's say, and they want to do it right, where they're really in alignment with their sovereignty, do you recommend a 501c3, Tonson?
In the first place, I'm not a licensed financial advisor, so I don't give recommendations of what people should do, but I can share my knowledge, you know.
Perfect.
Basically, a 501c3 is a nonprofit corporation that is tax exempt in the United States. And people in other countries have similar, you know, types of corporations you can use. The thing about it is that it's statutory, and one needs to understand that there are two basic traditional forms of law. You have the common law, which has been around for ages.
Yes.
That means the sum total of accumulation of decisions that the common people have arrived at through experience. And that's the closest thing to natural law. But then you have statutory law, which is where the government of the day and all of its minions passes, you know, legislation. And that changes from year to year. And there are millions and millions and millions of statutes at the federal level, the state level, the county, and the city. And I understand at one point there were 3 million law books in the Library of Congress. There is no person on this planet who has been able to possibly come anywhere near knowing all of those laws. There's just far too many. And so what the vested interests do for lawyers in law school is focus on teaching them not so much law and certainly not very much theory, but mostly procedure that will serve the vested interests. And so attorneys, when they graduate from law school, are ready to go out and implement procedures that basically serve the system. They don't even know about laws that are on the books, that what we call them hidden in plain view. Yeah. They've been there all along. Nobody knew they were there except a very few people. And a 501(c) is one of those entities that follows those long lists of regulations. And if you run one of those, you've got to fill out tons of paperwork and follow tons of regulations and pay fees and keep up with it. And then you've got to refile every year and you've got to say, oh dear Mr. IRS, this is how much I had coming in and this is how much went out. And is it okay if I still keep my exempt status? Oh, pretty please, 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 please. You know, and you're basically bowing down to this statutory agency, which is not a government agency. And the Federal Reserve is not a government institution.
Exactly.
Private bank, private cartel. And so this 501(c) is basically a confession document, you know. And the one benefit of it is that you can receive donations into it that are tax deductible for the donors. That's about the only reason I can think that would be beneficial to have one. Otherwise, my own experience and that of thousands of others is that it can be just as easily done, a lot more inexpensively, and a lot less paperwork and bureaucratic, zero basically, bureaucratic filings and compliance, is just to use what we call a natural law trust. And that trust can be designed like a foundation to make and receive grants and donations. The only difference is that those donations will not be tax deductible because it's not a statutory entity. But it's based on the ancient tradition of common law. It is honored in the courts. It is something that the super rich use themselves. The Mellons, the Kennedys, the Carnegies, the Rockefellers, they've used these trusts. So why not those of the light? Why not people who have humanitarian projects? Why not those who have healing centers, scientific research institutes, spiritual organizations? Why not use these trusts? Or even for your family, estate planning, holding company. Use these trusts for the same benefit of exemption from filing tax, not just exemption from paying. An exemption from filing. That's a far greater freedom than a 501(c), where you have to file every year and report what came in and what went out. With the natural law trust, it is exempt from filing. It is private. You enjoy privacy. You enjoy keeping those papers to yourself. They're not publicly disclosed. They're not posted on any public record. Copies of the trust are never given to any agency or institution. Only a few pages from it are given to the bank, certain pages to open a bank account. That's it.
Are you there, Salton?
This is one of the easiest ways for people to be free of the income tax. Now, that does not exempt an individual from filing an individual tax return. That's an entirely different topic.
Yes.
But that individual, if you are a taxpayer and if you do file tax returns, you can move your commerce into one of these trusts. Commerce meaning your business, your investments. If you have sources of income that are not, say, Social Security, but are not employee income from a boss, but if you have sources of income from a rental property, from an investment, from a business, or from services that you provide directly to your clients, products that you sell directly to the public, those monies can be paid directly to the trust. The trust can then take care of its trust officers, its beneficiaries. It can take care of the bills. It can see that all the monies that were previously being spent in one's individual name are now spent in the trust name. The same income is there, the same expenditures are there, but now it's in a venue which is exempt and free from filing.
So, I mean, the huge, huge piece here is, do you want to be exempt from paying tax, and do you want to be exempt from filing in the first place? You know, right. I mean, that's a really key. Now, going back to the trust, and we'll go ahead and just dive into this since we're already there. Can you clarify for everyone just a very simple distinction between creating a trust within the statutory law versus creating it within the natural law?
The system has programmed people to think that a trust is not going to do very well in society if it is not drawn up by a bar licensed attorney and registered with the state and follows all kinds of statutes and so forth. My own experience is contrary to that. I've been using these since 1993. I've not had a single problem. We already reviewed earlier in this program that I spent 4.5 years on false charges in prison on another unrelated to trusts issue.
Wow.
You would think that if they were trying to frame me, they would have attacked the trusts that I was managing, right?
Right, of course.
They did not. They didn't touch them. They steered clear of them. Why? Because the elite themselves use these trusts. If they attack these trusts, they would be shooting themselves in the foot.
Yes, they would.
So they are not going to legislate against them. They usually do not attack them. I don't know if any of the kind that I use have ever been attacked. The ones that have been attacked that call themselves common law trusts are obviously not designed correctly or operated correctly. The kind that we use and that we provide to our clients have never been attacked.
Fabulous. And that would lead me to my next question. What makes a trust bulletproof, for example?
Well, you have to have, for example, a trustee, you have to have a beneficiary, and you have to have a grantor, also known as settlor. And the settlor can also be a beneficiary, but cannot be a trustee. So if a trust is written such that the trustee also holds one of these other titles, that sets it up to be vulnerable, and that sets it up to be attacked, because that's a violation right there. Because that's like saying to the public, I'm holding assets on my own behalf, for my own benefit.
Right.
So that destroys the whole logic of the trust. You can't be a trustee and also hold other trust officer titles.
Right.
Another violation would be if the grantor, the settlor, were to also be signatory on all the other documents and have to sign off on the decisions of the trust. In other words, have control over the trust. That's called a sham in the trust community because it's called a grantor trust. Guess what? When I went to Chase Bank and I wanted to open an account for one of these trusts, they said, sorry, we're not going to open an account for it. And they actually gave me a reason. He said, because the grantor does not control and is not present on the other, authorizations of the trust. And when I discussed this with my friend who helps me set these trusts up, he almost fell off his chair laughing. He said, of course they would like that. They would love for you to have a grantor trust because it makes it a whole lot easier to penetrate. So your question, you know, how are these bulletproof? Well, that's one of the ways. Mm-hmm. One of the ways is you do not have the grantor have any control. The grantor must relinquish control of the asset that is placed into the trust. And that's called a genuine, authentic trust of integrity, because then it truly is a trust. You are trusting the trustee with those assets. Another technique that makes it invincible is that it's irrevocable. Let's say, Alexandra, you have $1 million. And let's say somebody thinks that they are owed that $1 million, or they want to get at your $1 million, even for an invalid reason. And they trump up some kind of situation where they try to make a court case. And let's say they were lucky enough to win somehow a judgment against you. And the court could then force you to give that $1 million to them. Not if it was owned by someone else, right?
Correct.
So if you have given that $1 million to the trust, and it's in the trust's name, if the trust is irrevocable, that means you can't get that $1 million back, even if you try to force it to. Mm. You can honestly say, I'm sorry, I don't have it. The trust has it. Now, if the trust were revocable, that means you could go to the trust and say, okay, I know I gave it to you, but I want it back now. It's revoked. I hereby revoke that gift. And the trust has to give it back. And then your so-called creditor, your opponent could say, okay, hand it over. But if it's irrevocable, you can honestly say, I no longer own it and I can't get it back. Sorry. And they can't get it from the trust because it's a separate legal entity, a separate name. It is not subject to the liabilities of any of the trust officers, including the trustee. Another of the advantages of our trust is that you can play any role you wish. You can be the trustee, or you can be the grantor and beneficiary and manager. You can play different roles. We give you various choices. We show you the responsibilities and the benefits and the consequences, and give you the choice of which roles you wish to play.
That's awesome.
Another of the protections is that the administration of the trust, its paperwork, its documentation, its activities, its assets are all kept private. So supposing a enemy, a would-be attacker, wants to get at the assets of the trust, the first thing it's going to need is a tremendous amount of information, right? So that its attack is intelligent. And if that information is not posted on a public record, how are they going to get it? They cannot even subpoena it, because if they subpoena something of a trustee, the trustee can honestly say, sorry, that's private information. I'm not at liberty to provide it, and I'm not obligated to provide it.
Tonson, can you elucidate us regarding just the history of trust? Because I think that's one of the core things that so many of us are missing, is the true necessity of having a trust as we move forward into this golden age. And I love, you know, I've dabbled in a lot of the research about it, but I loved one of the excerpts I read in your information about how the knights would go out and they would battle, and they kept coming back, and the king had taken some of their property and land without their approval.
Right. And so they solved that problem by entrusting their land to a friend.
There you go.
It's as simple as that. They say, well, I'm going to place my land or my asset in your name while I'm gone, and please hold on to it for me, and if you would be so kind, give it back to me when I come back. And if the trend is a true friend, then when he gets back, he'll give it back to him.
So, and then how did the Magna Carta fit in with all this?
Well, as you all know, they forced King John.
Yes, they did.
You either sign this or off with your head, you know. But basically repatriated the power to the people, you know. The king was just gathering way too much power. And so this was intolerable, and so the people took it back. and put the power in the hands of the people through the Magna Carta, principles from which eventually migrated into our United States Constitution, along with principles from the Iroquois Nation.
Yes.
Basically, the concept of trust probably goes back farther than that. I would imagine it goes back to the Greeks and the Romans and perhaps the Indians and the Chinese. I mean, it's an ancient concept, really. It's a simple concept, you know. Somebody's trying to attack me, trying to get my stuff. So would you please hold it for a while? You're invisible, or they don't hate you like they hate me. So, or they don't want to attack you like they want to attack me. This is not so necessary for someone who just wants to live a simple life and doesn't have much going on and maybe isn't involved in work that's risky. But anyone these days who has significant assets, who is involved in anything that is helping to evolve this planet to a higher level, probably would do better. I wouldn't go so far as to say it's essential or required, but I would say that for most people, it would be highly beneficial. Yeah.
Yeah, and because of the establishment of the Magna Carta, it's not something that the elite can ignore. In fact, it's the way in which they created their own trust structures around the concept, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
So I want everybody to understand that. Go back and study the Magna Carta. It's huge. It's like the greatest gift to humanity, and I think it's where we're moving back towards. That leads me to my next question, which is, how do you feel the shift in the world with all of the light is impacting the IRS and other agencies? What are you feeling as you dabble in this kind of financial processing? You know, where are you seeing the changes and the shifts with them?
Yeah, there's going to come a time very soon where you'll call up the IRS and the recording will say, I'm sorry, that number's been disconnected.
Yes! I can't wait.
There has been a spiritual sleep where people think that we're separate egos, and the awakening is that we are all one. And when we are all one, you suddenly realize, number one, there's enough abundance. We don't need to thieve it from each other. And secondly, whatever I do unto anyone else, I've done unto myself.
Definitely.
So until that awakening has spread high enough and far enough, this old taxation system has been in place. I remember Maharishi putting it down, saying, what a stupid system of administration, you know.
Yes.
And he gave governing principles that are based on bliss. And when you govern the universe through bliss, you give, you're a giver. And if you govern, you are a benefactor. You are a giver. You are into benevolence. But those who fancy themselves and are masquerading as governors, as presidents, as kings, and are taxing their people are deceiving themselves and everybody else. Because a true system of global, of you might say higher dimensional or administration of the light is one where one gives, one is a emperor, one is a overflowing provider. And the administration right now, the way it has been we take from half of the population and give to the other half. And that's what Ron Paul is against. Congressman Ron Paul has been more libertarian oriented. Let's stop that. Let's stop taking from one side and giving to the other side. I must add, though, as much as I love and respect people like him, there's a missing element. The missing element is that there is unlimited prosperity available through free energy technologies, through the proper administration of what is already in the marketplace, as well as what can and will come into the marketplace, that will make every last man, woman, and child on this planet a multimillionaire.
Yes.
Yeah, I know your question was about income tax. Bear with me for a moment, please, because this is very important to understand the income tax. Buckminster Fuller, who had 48 PhDs, you familiar with him?
Yes.
Okay. Those who lived in the 70s know this. The younger people, look up Buckminster Fuller. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. I wrote about him in my article, Dawn of the Golden Age Prosperity, which came out in the early 90s. And he wrote a book called Operating Manual for Spaceship Earth. And in there, he talks about how basically he did a calculation where he took all of the wealth in the world, all of the money in the marketplace and the banks and so forth, and added it up. Now keep in mind, Buckminster Fuller had 48 PhDs. He was a professor, mathematician, economist, philosopher, author, lecturer, inventor, inventor of the geodesic dome, all kinds of things. So he calculated that if the estimated total world man-made production already in the marketplace, basically the gross world product, was evenly divided amongst an approximate world population of 5 or 6 billion at that time, every last man, woman, and child on Earth would be a multimillionaire. So this is not to advocate some socialistic forced redistribution. Not at all. It was simply to illustrate there is no shortage of supply. Never has been. And then if you study the work of Walter Burian on the CAFRs, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports, you find out about the two sets of books that every government keeps. The public books where they say, we're running short of capital and we've got to raise taxes and all of that. And then the private set of books that are hidden behind the scenes with vast treasure troves of funds that have been stolen from the people. And they go into the black ops projects and all of that.
Exactly.
So the income tax was twofold. Number one, to control the people. And number two, to create the illusion of scarcity. If you are, as we have been experiencing for 100 years since 1913, when the Federal Reserve Act was passed, if you are running a monetary system that is backed by nothing, you have a dollar that no longer is backed by gold, it's fiat currency, and you want to make it look valuable, you may as well make it scarce. Because if it's abundant, well, then it's not so valuable, right? So they think. And if you tax it, it makes it look even more valuable. And you also end up creating fear and control. So it's the perfect tool for an enslaving kind of mentality. Nevertheless, it is a characteristic that is going to disappear from the face of this earth. It has already disappeared from the lives of millions of people who don't pay it. Millions and millions and millions and millions of Americans don't pay it, don't file. Most of whom never set up any paperwork to protect themselves. In fact, one of the IRS commissioners quit her job, citing too many non-filers. But there are advisable procedures to put in place to protect oneself in this non-filing capacity. And I don't recommend what people do. I'm not sitting here saying sure that you should or should not be
a filer. Nor would you want to,
No, I'm not here to give you advice on that,
Tonson, let me just interject because I have a story about that. After the accident, I was going stir crazy because I was in bed for such a long period of time. And I found a local seminar at the Learning Annex of a retired IRS agent. Okay. And I thought, I got to go see what this guy has to say. He proceeded telling the small little seminar, there weren't that very many people there. He proceeded to tell them that all of the IRS agents were having a hissy fit, that they had literally almost thrown kind of like an internal coup. They were irritated with the IRS because they had made some regulations and changes in policy regarding work, regarding hours, and regarding the pay. Well, what happened was the entire IRS system, computer system, all of the satellite systems, everything went down. Now, this is back in 2007 or time frame, somewhere around there, six-ish maybe. And he said it was the best kept secret ever that they lost something like 60% of their database of filers. So if you had not reissued and just assumed that you had to file, because everyone that files, typically they go through this catch-22 where they're angry that they're filing, but they're in so much fear if they don't file, you know? And his whole point was that 60% of their database, Thompson, was lost that day. Bam. Overnight.
That's amazing.
Unbelievable. And that gets back to the trust, which is, you know, we are so transparent in our own private assets. I mean, we have no protection. The average person, even those that have a lot of assets, I frankly feel, they still are very, very unprotected with a government that is not here for our benefit. So why not delve into the land of trusts and really get educated on this very topic? You know, it's very important.
Right. And so those who already know the income tax does not go to support public services are aware of a fact, and those who are not aware of this need to be educated. This was admitted in 1983 by President Reagan while in office in his testimony to the Grace Commission when he was asked, where does the income tax money go? And he stated, for the record, 100% of the income tax money that you pay to the IRS is spent on interest payments to the Federal Reserve before one nickel is spent on the services that taxpayers expect from government.
Right.
Next, you can then look up the Federal Reserve. And, of course, everybody uses the internet these days, but in the days when you used to use the paper telephone book, look up the Federal Reserve in a city where one of the 12 branches exists, like San Francisco or Chicago, New York. Look it up. Is it in the white pages? Is it in the blue pages, the government pages? No. It's in the yellow pages, or, well, the white business pages, under Federal Express, private business. So you write a check to the IRS, it comes back stamped on the back, paid to the Federal Reserve. You have just paid your income tax to a private business.
Thank you for saying that. Trust number, no, that's the IRS, trust number 62, right, in Puerto Rico?
Right. And so not a penny of that has gone to an international crime syndicate, basically. Not a penny of that goes to pay for the local hospitals, the roads, the bridges, the schools. And it's pretty much the same with state income tax and local taxes and so forth.
Well, and a lot of people will say, well, I feel like I need to pay my just contribution because, you know, I use the roads and this and that, and so I'm perfectly happy paying. Well, what do they think they're doing every time they buy a good? Every time they, I mean, look at our gasoline tax here in California. I think we figured out something like at least 80 cents at least was taxes.
Exactly, sales taxes. Here's another fact and statistic for you. Did you know that in the year 1900, before America had an income tax, there was a $1 billion surplus in the Treasury?
Whoa.
Where did that money come from? It came from corporate taxes. It came from excise taxes, import, export taxes, all kinds of, you know, property taxes. There were all kinds of other taxes besides the income tax.
That's really interesting.
$1 billion surplus. What do we have today? An $18 or $20 trillion deficit?
Deficit. I know.
And the income tax was supposed to make our treasury flush with money. So what happened?
Well, now also clarify for them that they understand jurisdiction too. I think that's another just quick snippet you want, you know, talk about the, what is the true definition of a United States citizen versus an American?
You were born, if you were born in the United States, you were born a de jure, original, constitutional citizen with a capital C, or even you could say a member of the human race, you know, a natural human being.
Yes.
And you had rights. But this system, the cabal, the dark forces, basically created this clever deception called U.S. citizen with a small C that came into vogue in the 1800s and got really going in the early 1900s with the birth certificate and with the Social Security number and your 1040 tax form and all of that. All these adhesion contracts, these hidden contracts behind the scenes that they've used your signature to basically dupe you into a second class citizenship that does not have rights, it has privileges. And it's a kind of a slavery. It's a subtle form of slavery. And that's why people don't usually find justice in the courts. That's why people don't usually find justice going on in the banking system or with the taxation.
And it's also thievery, because just our mere birthright is directly associated with a bond that they're using to their benefit as if it's their money and it's not yours.
Now, it is interesting to observe this. I wrote the book Sovereignty Consciousness in 97, that essentially you only need to wake up spiritually. As to how you document that on the public record is a complex process that varies from person to person. Alexandra, you had a wonderful speaker on your show earlier, Winston Shrout, who yeah. teaches a lot of this, how to document oneself properly, to correct one's status. I myself have gone through a lot of documentation, filing on the public record ever since the early 90s. And I suppose it does some good, but the essential thing, the absolutely essential thing, is that each individual have his or her own direct experience of the divine. That's the most basic foundational thing. You must have not just a belief system. You must have some way of experiencing yourself as a sovereign individual connected to your inner divinity on a daily basis. You must have that baseline consciousness, what I call sovereignty consciousness. You must realize yourself as a king or a queen. You must know that there is no human being that rules you, that is over you, that can dictate to you. You must know that you are a king or a queen, that you command your own affairs, you answer only to the God within. And that's it. Everything else is secondary. How you manage your paperwork, how you manage your documentation, how you reflect yourself on the public record, whether you carry a passport and a driver's license, whether you file and sign a 1040 form, what we call a confession form. Did you know when you sign that 1040 form, it's a confession under penalty of perjury?
Whoa.
So, I mean, whatever you sign that the cabal has given you to sign does not necessarily compromise your true status. It may reflect it inaccurately on the public record, and you can take seminars. It's all over the internet. All over the internet. There are websites, there are seminars, there are books, there's places all over the place that'll help you document yourself correctly to improve your status. And we ourselves, Alexandra, we are in touch with various tax consultants, and yes, we are actually considering adding to our La Verite services consultants who will help people with this process.
Fantastic.
Yes, there's been enough demand. Originally, we thought, no, it's not really needed. It's not really our cup of tea. It's not our specialty. But there's been enough demand. There is enough awareness, and there is enough success.
I was just going to say that. And the light is really supporting that impetus, that movement to break through these shackles, that these policies, all, you know, I mean, I remember working with, do you remember Keith Anderson?
Yes.
Okay. I worked with his department. And one thing I really learned when, when I was on a couple of their calls with them, I was just blown away listening to these people who had worked, you know, work their whole life, and they had nothing to pay their IRS, and they were coming after their pension, which was supposedly completely illegal. They were coming after their disability. They ended up homeless and living out of their car, and they were very, very ill. And I saw one case after another after another. I mean, this was, in my opinion, one of the most evil institutions on the planet.
Well, that should give people a clue, okay? If the income tax were ethical as well as legal, if it were really needed to support our government, don't you think it would be operated in a benevolent way? Don't you think they would never, you know, use it to such an extreme degree like that?
Yeah, you're right.
You know, it should be, if there were such a thing as an ethical tax system, it should be a little portion of your productivity that you voluntarily provide for the good of the community, and they should never, ever, ever be enforced to the degree that you take everything from somebody and they're on the streets living out of their car.
I totally agree.
That is the mark of a parasitic, evil, dark, ignorant, basically satanic administration.
Yeah, it's definitely not reflecting us.
No.
However, we have to contend with it. And, you know, I forgot where I read on your site, but, you know, each and every one of us, the more we step out and take care of our financial responsibilities in a sovereign manner, not just in a way that we just do it all the time because this is how we've always done it, and there's still that fear, there's still that overlay, oh no, if I don't do this, you know, this is what's going to happen. Really stepping out, and the time is now for us to break free of this paradigm and this construct of fear around our finances. It's also one of the number one reasons we are struggling so much financially. You know, and you do almost have to get to a place, Tonson, where you're standing on the edge of a cliff and you're going, okay, I'm going to go for this because it's just ringing, just resonating to the core of my being, and I absolutely know that the universe has my back.
You made a statement a few minutes ago that the light has increased and that it's supporting this more now, and that finally is evidencing itself.
Yes.
It's very true. We've been seeing blow by blow the minions being removed or enlightened. Either the dark has come over to the light, or it's disappeared, it's been arrested, it's been jailed, or it's been killed. And then the minions are either, you know, leaving ranks, joining the light, getting educated, waking up. We have ex-IRS agents. We have ex-attorneys joining us. We have, in 2015 alone, we had so many wonderful allies join our cause.
That's awesome.
Say, we're on your side. Let's work together, and we're going to contribute our expertise. And we have all these geniuses, people who know the system from the inside out. They know its mechanics, exactly how it works, exactly how to either dismantle it or use it for good, use it for the benefit. A lot of the aspects of the system's mechanisms are neutral. It's like a computer. You can use it for good or evil. And so why not use the system for equitable administration?
That's been a toughie for a lot of people is, you know, they're so disgusted with the system. They just think it's so corrupt to the core. They want to throw the whole thing out.
Right.
But I really do believe that the system, if we just pulled out all the tentacles of corruption, the actual construct of the system is fairly efficient. You know, it's really the seed in which it was, sprouted from, that's been absolutely a contagion and a disease that's affected our planet. So, I mean, things like what you're offering here, you know, are a key ingredient in us being able to represent ourselves as the up and coming ascended masters on this planet that are literally walking out towards humanity and beyond, and really representing ourselves in alignment with, I am a sovereign being. And this is such a huge piece of it. Tonson, question. These trusts, are they applicable to other parts of the world? Because I know there's a lot of, you know, overseas listeners listening.
Absolutely. And that's the one thing that differentiates it from our debt elimination system. Debt elimination is applicable only to United States debts at this time. We have had a lot of demand from other countries, and we're preparing a version for Canada. But the trust is equally applicable in every country throughout the world because common law goes everywhere.
Cool.
So, yes, it can be used. It's not based on United States law. It's based on natural law, which goes everywhere, and the Uniform Commercial Code, which goes everywhere.
And, you know, I noticed you also said that the trust rider is available for consultation if you need it. And I noticed you have a very full-blown legal team. Can you talk a little bit about why it's important for people to see a new way of, how do I say this, administering papers and procedures and policies? There's always that trigger within so many that the moment they see that it isn't status quo, or it isn't being positively aspected, or it's not approved by the government or what have you. Can you address that as far as what do you say to your clients when that kind of thing comes up?
I would say get educated. You know, the system controllers themselves know it best because they're the ones who administered the fabrication and the obfuscation. It's like Wizard of Oz. You know, the wizard on the stage isn't really a real thing. It's just an illusion. There's a guy behind a curtain pulling all the controls. And once you've gotten educated, you've read it enough, you've heard enough, you've seen it, you've experienced it, you see it clearly that it's all an illusion. And anybody who thinks you have to use some statutory attorney-created trust because, oh, that's the status quo and that's what, well, go ahead. You will find from your own experience how much trouble it is. You'll find from your own experience that too isn't perfect. That too has all kinds of bugs in it. That too has risks. That too will get you in all kinds of trouble. In fact, a lot more trouble than our kinds of trusts. Why is it the people are so afraid of something that has never had a problem? We've had no problem. Since 1993, I've been using them, and our other trust people have been using them since the 80s. We've had no challenges from any agency. We've had no loss of assets, no penetrations, no legal problems. And this is a reality. This is a truth.
You know, Thompson, I asked myself that same question this morning right before I got on with you. You know, what is it that's really caused this? But if you think about, you know, every appointment that people have with their banker, their CPA, their tax attorney, you know, they're all in it together, folks. I mean, this is a conspiracy, you know, that we stay numbed out and dumbed down as to what we can truly do to set ourselves up in a more sovereign place.
There's an important saying. The only rights you have are the rights you know you have.
Good point.
That bears repeating. I'm going to say it one more time.
Yeah.
The only rights you have are the rights you know you have. If you have a right and you don't know that you have it, you may as well not have it because you don't know how to stand up for it. You don't know how to exercise it. You can't express it. You can't articulate it. There is a court case, one of the most quoted court cases in American history, never been overturned, called Hale versus Hinkle, H-A-L-E versus H-E-N-K-L-E. Look it up, 1905. Never been overturned. It states very clearly, Americans have the unlimited right to enter into contract with each other without interference from the government.
It's huge.
It is that right on which we base this. Even though the trust is applicable in all countries throughout the world, that principle more or less is expressed in all countries. Human beings intrinsically have the right to enter into contract with each other privately without interference from any legal body or authority, as long as they're not harming anybody in the process.
Right.
The basic essence of all common law consists of two things. Imagine throwing out all the laws on this planet except for two. You have the unlimited right to do anything you please as long as you don't violate the rights of others, the rights, the property, you know, as long as you don't harm anyone else.
Right.
And number two, keep your agreements. Keep your word. If you give your word to someone in writing or verbally, keep it. Imagine if everything on this planet were reduced to those two. So you have the right to operate one of these trusts. You do not have to get it approved by your CPA. You do not have to get it approved by an attorney. You do not have to have it approved by anybody. This right is intrinsic to human beings, and it is confirmed by the U.S. Supreme Court. But it doesn't matter if the Supreme Court confirmed it or not. You have it. It's intrinsic. That's part of your sovereignty consciousness.
Thank you. That's where I was hoping you would go.